All right, man. Let's get in here. Matt George with us. They've been waiting all day for you to join us, Matt.
Mm. We just going to let Matt cook. You know, Matt about to fire this organization up. Boy, oh boy.
Let's start with the changes, Matt, before we get to the game. Monty McNair out as the general manager. Scott Perry in. It took minutes for this to happen, which is... led everybody to believe, including us, from our time together last night, roaming around the court before the game started, that this plan has been in place for a long time. And that's where we are now. Matt, we have a new general manager in Scott Perry.
And that almost concerns me more this morning than I even was last night, I think, with this organization, because clearly, this has been the works. This is not a decision that they just made in the 10 hours since Monty McNair lost his job, right? Like, this has been a conversation for a while, meaning you had essentially a lame duck general manager sitting there in a cold seat, taking the blame or just sitting there twiddling his thumbs while his organization and the team that he built crumbled around him. And then you have his replacement already in place. And here you are starting a extremely volatile offseason, already doing things by your book and not the textbook. And that's what scares the crap out of me. I think Sacramento Kings fans should be terrified today, not by the Scott Perry hiring. I think Scott Perry is great, but by the manner in which the man is being hired, the fact that there was no national search. There was no steps process. This was done, right? Like, the decision had been made. Hey, forget even trying for Bob Myers. Maybe it was a pipe dream. I don't know, but at least try and have a conversation with the dude or any other executives that are potentially out there that you could find that maybe are willing to attack this organization's issues with a different kind of angle or a different kind of mindset than the mindsets that already are here in this organization that quite frankly haven't worked. Now, Scott Perry was here for what, 3 months? So we don't know too much of what Scott Perry would have been and who he is in Sacramento. We do know he was an assistant to Vlade Divac. We do know he has a pretty good understanding, at least in a short period of time, of how this organization works. But there is nothing that this organization has done over the last 13 years that Vivek Ranadive has owned the team. There's nothing that they've done to earn the faith and confidence that they're going to handle this correctly. Sometimes the way that everybody else does it is probably the way that you should do it, especially when you tried it your way over and over and over again. And with the exception of 1 year and kind of a second year, it hasn't worked. And that's what scares me today, is not if Scott Perry's going to be the general manager, not if Doug Christie's going to be the head coach, but did you already make this move because that's the guy that you wanted without going through the proper process? And are you making this hiring of Scott Perry because you know he's familiar with you and he will do what you want in making Doug Christie your full-time head coach? If this is the case, then we're running into the same issues. The same people are calling the shots. It's going to be, it feels like the cycle is just going to continue. And if I'm a Sacramento Kings fan, which of course I am, that freaks me out. There's no reason to believe it's going to be different. And if it is, then Scott Perry and Doug Christie figured it out and they deserve all the credit. But at that point, this just feels like blind faith, right? So this off, like, firing Monty McNair needed to happen. I've been calling for it on my podcast. I've been calling for it on this show for months. It needed to happen. I believe last night's blowout loss needed to happen because this organization needed to look hard in the mirror at what they've built, how big of a short-sighted failure it was, and address and react accordingly. And I feel like they've reacted, certainly, but they've reacted in a way that they're falling back on old tendencies that don't exactly give me the biggest level of confidence or excitement that anything's going to change or anything's going to be different. If you were to ask me right now, Matt, do you think Scott Perry is coming into Sacramento with full basketball decision-making power, 100%, and that if Doug Christie is the head coach, it's going to be 100% his decision? If you were to ask me that right now, I would tell you absolutely not. There's no reason to believe that. Now, owners are owners. Their voices are heard. This is nothing specific to Sacramento. But Sacramento has been doing this over and over again and failing over and over again. So that's why they're under the spotlight, and ownership here is under the spotlight for doing things that maybe other ownership teams and other groups around professional sports have done, except they've managed to figure it out for more than a year or two. This organization has not. And here they are back in a worse position than when Vlade relinquished the job or was fired or stepped away or whatever the hell happened, and Monty McNair took over. This organization's in a worse spot, because at least then you had a young piece in De'Aaron Fox and some sort of twinkle in your eye, hope and optimism for the future. Now you have like Keon Ellis, which I'm thrilled about, but he's not a star. You have three guys, 136, 130, and the other one 28, all making a combined $115 million a year. Excuse me, $115 million next year. That's eating up a boatload of your cap space. And we don't know if any of the three of them really truly want to be here, or if you can be successful and win with any of the three of them. The Kings did this to themselves. And this offseason is their opportunity to take the necessary and maybe even painfully slow steps to fix it and get out of it. And it already feels like they're going back to same old, which doesn't speak well for how this is going to turn out, in my opinion.
A couple things. We're just talking, like, because I don't disagree with the things that you say at all. But I just would point out, number one, Scott Perry's not Monty McNair. Like, he ain't no puppet. From everything that I've seen of him and known of him from this time in the league, he's a respected executive. He's not a first-time guy. He's got relationships that run 2-3 decades deep. He's not Monty McNair. Now, who knows what he's going to do here? He might be a complete failure, but that's not who this guy is. The other thing is, going about it the same old way, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but what happened last night and the way it goes about it, that is kind of par for the course for the league, to be honest with you, more times than not. We see it with coaches. We see it with general managers. How do all these basketball, all the players, get signed 2 minutes after the start of the free agency period? Because they've been talking for months. So,
no evidence on this show to ever prove that that's true.
No evidence.
None.
No. But that happens all the time. And I can't remember if it was the coaching search or the GM search. Didn't they hire a firm? Didn't they, like, go through the process the way everybody wants them to? And here we are today.
Yeah. Was that the Monty hire?
That was the Monty hire. But they also royally screwed that up in their own way by
hiring
their
Wes Wilcox
involvement. Yep. So, like, they can't just do something by the book. That's the point. And again, it's not the Scott Perry hiring that I have a problem with. I'm thrilled with the dude. I have a problem with how quickly it was done, how there wasn't even any other thoughts, anything else. What you said, Kenny, is absolutely right. But we're talking about free agency signings of players. We're not talking about hiring a general manager while there's someone still in that seat and you're having conversations like that for months. And also, look, like, not to open the door to a can of worms, but everything is on the freaking table. Scott Perry was an assistant to Vlade Divac. Vlade Divac is hanging around more. It was mentioned in a couple of Athletic articles, or at least one, about Vlade Divac hanging around more. Like, I don't think Scott Perry is Vlade Divac. I don't think Scott Perry is going to come in here and make the same mistakes, or we should just write him off because he's part of the past of the Sacramento Kings. But I'm saying, like, it just all of this just feels like the continuation of a pattern, which is ultimately what I feel this organization has to get themselves, separate themselves from, doing the same thing over and over again. It's just, it feels like we're jumping right back on the carousel.
Here's my opinion. I actually think Matt is right. but I also think you are too, Casey. And that
I'll pick a side.
Well, I don't, but there's I think Matt's right that there's a. It's the I was using the phrase earlier. It's the process of the process. Like, watch how this is unfolding. Mm-hmm. You talk about Scott Perry. You mentioned Vlade Divac there a second ago. He was referenced in Sam Amick's article. I believe Vlade was a part of the Scott Perry hiring. Why? Because Vlade knows Scott Perry. He's one of the few guys in the league that he knows. Did they come together? Did they come up with an idea? Like, hey, maybe this could be our next general manager. You start having conversations. Maybe you get his thoughts on how he feels about Doug Christie as a potential head coach, and you start putting that in place. Doesn't mean it's the wrong hire, though. That's the other part of this. Matt, you might be 100% right, and the process in this is wrong. Maybe the process in this is unfair, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the hire was wrong. And so it's a tough thing to rationalize if you're a Sacramento Kings fan, because you might want to like the hire of Scott Perry, because we were told this last night, and I'll repeat it because we said it earlier in the show. This organization can't handle a first-time general manager. Absolutely cannot. And while, you know, the Monty McNair hire or the combination of hires showed to be successful in the short term, it was not successful in the long term. You need a person with established footing in this league, which Scott Perry has. Again, you might not like the process. You might not even like the hire, but you can separate the two if you do like the hire. Matt George doesn't like the process. Perfectly fine. But do you like Scott Perry as a general manager?
Yes.
So,
I do.
And you could absolutely be right with your frustration with the process, and I interrupted you, but you like Scott Perry as the hire.
Yes, I think his track record speaks for itself. I think his reputation around the league is extremely important. The process is just hard to look past for me. It comes from a, I think, well-earned and deserved distrust in this organization to handle themselves correctly. And to do this right. I would have loved to see this organization do it completely by the book. That's what I think you wanted to see. KC, yeah, they brought out a firm and did this wide search. Good. They should do it again. And what did it result in? The best general manager they've had in this entire tenure. Now, it hasn't worked out through other decisions that they made, but at least it got them short-term results. It got them something. So I would have liked to see them do it. Even if Scott Perry ends up being the guy, it's the same way I talk about Doug Christie. If Doug Christie is the hire, great. Talk to 7 to 10 other coaches. Do an interview process and make sure that if Doug Christie is the hire, it's not the decision of Vivek Ranadive or Anjali or Matina or all these people that really like Doug Christie because of how great of a motivator he is or because he was on the team in 2002. Take all those factors off the freaking table. Stop. There's so many freaking voices and branches to this tree when the reality should just be bring in the basketball decision maker. Okay, it's Scott Perry. Now let Scott Perry have 100% autonomy in the decisions that he makes. And unfortunately, the reality of the situation is if Scott Perry decides that Doug Christie is his head coach, that's going to be, or if the Kings proceed with Doug Christie as the head coach, that's going to be met with a level of skepticism. That's going to be met with a level of whose hire was this? Whose choice was this? Was this imposed on Scott Perry? And we can roll our eyes at that and get annoyed by that, but that's a position that this organization, this ownership group has put themselves in through their own freaking actions over 13 years. So they can't be upset about it when they have the track record. So many coaches, so many players, so many front office executives have come and gone. The constant is this ownership group. And while I think it is a cop-out to constantly blame ownership, and that everybody from the front office all the way through that locker room needs to take ownership and initiative of the things that they did wrong and their failures, starting with last night and going through this entire season, going through the last 2 years. Everybody has to look in a mirror. But you look at what the constant is, and you look at patterns and cycles, and it looks like the last 24 hours has been handled, in my opinion, fits into the pattern, fits into the cycle. And the Kings have to prove to myself, themselves, the national media, their fan base, everybody, that this time it's going to be different. And there's just no reason to believe it's going to be. It's a very pessimistic viewpoint of this organization and the place that they're at, but it's the position that they put themselves in. And I don't think hiring Perry less than 12 hours after firing Monty McNair does you any kind of favors. It doesn't look good for you.
What if it was 12 minutes? Because you have time.
Even worse.
Oh, okay.
Scott Perry could have come in and hit him, Monty with a chair in the back like Roman Reigns.
So this is,
it could have been that.
This is, it's not that different. In I brought it up yesterday. That's why the way this went down is funny, because I brought it up yesterday with New Orleans. I had like feelings about Joe Dumars, like Joe was kind of here in the shadows. He had an official position actually in Sacramento. He wasn't really in the shadows. And then he goes to the league office. He takes the, job pretty quickly. What happened in New Orleans is pretty much identical to what happened here in Sacramento. And, Casey was quick to point it out, like, hey, you might feel this, but that's the game. Like, you've got to move quickly with your front office. If you want to take time, if you're searching for a head coach, that's fine. But you've got to move quick with your front office, because you can't really do anything until you have that front office in place. And I think the tough part is, Matt, and this is obviously where your frustration lies, is the decision to fire Monty McNair and the decision to hire Scott Perry wasn't made 12 hours apart, and they weren't made yesterday.
Right. And to me, it just speaks to the writing has been on the wall for a while, which is, it's like the most depressing, worst I told you so, but everything that I said I was concerned about happening and how it would play out, literally everything to a T from the day that Mike Brown was fired to today, has played out. Like, and it, again, it's not a look how right I am. It's a, this is the position that this organization put themselves in. To me, the writing has been on the wall. And yet, over the course of that path, they've continued to make wrong decision after wrong decision after wrong decision. Look, if the writing was on the wall for Monty McNair, and so much so that you're already having conversations with Scott Perry and you're having Vlade Divac sitting courtside with you again, why the hell are you letting the man trade your franchise freaking player? And if the response to that is, well, Monty didn't trade him. Vivek traded for the guy that he wanted to try and save his season. To me, that's even worse. If that's the explanation, that is worse.
I think that's
if ownership stepped past the GM to go and get the player that they wanted, that is worse.
But what if they stepped past the GM? But what if they stepped past the GM because they knew they were firing the GM?
Then it's still complete malpractice, in my opinion. Like, it doesn't make you look any better. Again, to me, it makes you look completely worse, because this was all done in a foolish attempt to meet this playoff mandate that ultimately didn't mean anything. Like, you just hamstrung yourself all for the possibility of selling tickets to two playoff games. Well, congratulations. You got a sold out play-in game and embarrassed the hell out of your fan base on national television for it. But maybe you get that extra little check. Congratulations. Like, I don't know why the playoff mandate was so important. I want to make the playoffs. I want playoff basketball here in Sacramento too. I don't know why it was so important to risk everything and mortgage potentially the future of this organization, or at least put a halt to the future of this organization, in order to go for that by doing something that we have track record in this league that doesn't work. Pairing LaVine and DeRozan together. No matter which way you turn it, whether it was Monty's decision or not, he deserved to be fired. If it's ownership's decision, they should not be making basketball decisions. And that's been the problem. They've consistently been making basketball decisions over the course of their ownership tenure. And again, that's not abnormal in sports. This happens amongst owners. But you have the track record of being terrible. The organization went from a bright, pun intended, light with the Beam Team one and look at this bright future, and there's finally they're figuring something out, to 2 years falling right back into the same low-hanging fruit laughingstock that they've been around, not just the NBA, but around all of professional sports. I heard Brian Windhorst's comments on ESPN today. They're 100% right.
That's right. Yep.
So we can get mad at it. Oh, they're making the Kings, they're making fun of the Kings on national television. Yeah, because the Kings kind of walk into it.
Kings made fun of Kings themselves on national television last night.
They played themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just the faith and confidence in this organization is low, and it should be low for everybody. I'm not saying you can't have what I used to have, which is the blind optimism and just the belief that it'll all work out, and it's I'm rooting for the Kings no matter what. If that's you, God bless you. Go for it. And I hope you're right, and I hope you win, and hope like sour losers like myself get shut the hell up. I genuinely do. But this organization has done nothing. This ownership group has done nothing outside of a lightning in a bottle year to build that kind of confidence and trust that they're going to handle this correctly. Hopefully Scott Perry and maybe Doug Christie can save it. But I don't know if that's just flip a coin.
Yeah, man. And I hear everything you say. I talked about it earlier. I'll reiterate it again. I'm not that worried about the process, because the process at the end of the day for me doesn't matter. You could handle everything right, and if you win 31 games, I'm not going to be happy because you handled everything right. You could handle everything wrong, and if you win 55 games, I'm not going to be looking at that with a side eye because you didn't handle it right. They've got to find
sure.
a way. They've got to find a way, come hell or high water, to turn anything that they do, right way of going about it, wrong way, whatever, it has to turn into wins. Like I said, we talked about Vivek talking. We talked about the process of it. And I'm not saying anybody's wrong for caring about the process, but I just know me, Kenny Caraway, I don't care about the process no more. I'm sick of the season ending the second week of April. That's the only thing that I want to change, is that the season don't end then. That's it. I don't care how you get there. Just pay people under the table. Break rules. I don't care. I'm sick of seeing that. And that's kind of my aspect of it.
So I actually agree with you 100%. So again, why would we expect a different result if the process is continuing to be the same? That's my whole thing, is I think the Kings are just setting themselves up to going around again. Let's try it this time. Maybe this time it'll be different. Like that is just, that's where I feel that we're at with this group.
I think it's perfectly fair to feel that way. As we outlined at the beginning of the show, however you feel today, it's fine. Mm-hmm. No matter what it is. Like it's perfectly okay.
And whoever's fault you think it is, you're right.
Yep, 100%. That's 100. If you think it's Matt George's fault.
Well, no, now you've gone too far.
Okay.
Right. No, that's fair.
Matt and Kevin looking like $1 million doing their television hit yesterday, by
nice
the way.
Nice watch.
Thanks. I got it at Walmart. It was like a costume jewelry piece, mm-hmm. but it's one of those things that it catches the light. It looks really nice.
Well, that's what Sean says. You get it at Claire's. You get it at Claire's. We have spent a lot of time, Matthew, talking about Scott Perry, Monty McNair, Vivek Ranadive. None of those guys were on the court last night. None of those guys gave up a 44-19 second quarter. Fun fact, Kings won the other three quarters. 44-19. On their home floor in the second quarter, ended the game. None of those people we just mentioned were on the floor for that one. And there's one particular individual that's drew the ire of us for sure and a lot of different other people. When you talk about your peak level of frustration last night on the floor, Matthew, who does it start with?
Domantas Sabonis. Mm-hmm. My boy.
Yeah.
The guy that I spent hours, there's probably hours of recorded video or audio out on the internet of me saying that just wait, Just wait till Domas gets back there. He's gonna shut all you up. Just wait. Like you want to talk about the Golden State Warriors series every time you need to come up with an argument against Domantas Sabonis when he's putting up triple doubles on your team or monster double doubles or is winning all NBA honors. Like you want to keep bringing that stuff up, or all you have to lean on, the only ace in the hole that you have is that Golden State Warriors series. But just wait. And then Sabonis did that.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I have not completely there are a lot of people for some reason that think that my opinion changes with the wind. It doesn't. I react to things as they come. There's consistencies with what I believe in, like this team is not good, this organization is not in a good spot. That didn't mean I didn't enjoy the two wins over the Cleveland Cavaliers or the win in Boston, or wasn't rooting for Doug Christie's success or anything like that. It's the same thing with Domantas Sabonis. One game has not changed my opinion of Domantas Sabonis and the fact that I think you can absolutely win with Domantas Sabonis, a top three center in the league, on your roster. That hasn't changed. But I thought Domas' performance was pathetic. I thought Domas' performance for his guy and Doug Christie was pathetic. I thought Doug Christie or Domas' opportunity to shut these people up, he just doesn't. And I know it gets to him. I know it bothers him. But we've heard about it. He's talked about it. That was your opportunity, and that's what you provided. That's what you came up with. Like, there's no way to defend it. There's no way to sugarcoat it, right? It doesn't matter what I say on the podcast or what we say on this radio show or what he said on his Netflix documentary show or whatever. It doesn't matter. At this point, are you going to play well on the big stage in big games, or are you not going to?
Mm-hmm.
Another opportunity passed him by last night where he played worse than at any point in the entire Golden State Warriors series. Domantas Sabonis played worse last night than at any point versus Golden State. He was completely outclassed by arguably all three big men in Dallas. Gafford out-muscled him. Anthony Davis showed why he's a better player. And then Derek Lively out-hustled you. It can't happen. And all of the low-hanging fruit and takes about Sabonis and not being able to win with Sabonis, there's nothing you can say to him today. Because there's nothing to say. It's all actions at this point. And Sabonis doesn't have the action or hasn't put up the action to shut them up. He's got to wear that.
And I like Domantas Sabonis too, just like everybody else. I like his game. I think he's talented. But I think when they talk about not being able to win with him as a top guy, I'm convinced they're right. If you're going to win, and I'm not even talking about like 48 wins or winning in the play-in. Like if you're trying to be a four seed or higher, he got to be like your fourth best player. Like when it gets down to the playoff time and people can really lock in on your deficiencies and ways to make you uncomfortable, he's got too many holes in his game, or even more so, he doesn't have enough answers in his game to be able to lead a team, to be able to take a team and elevate a team and elevate his game. You're gonna need some safety nets. You're gonna need about 3-4 guys where if Domas has 11 points in a game, you still got a shot. And he's a really good ball player. Really, really good ball player. But the thought of, like you say, a top three center in this league or top 15, top 20 player in the league, like he can't be that. He puts up great stats, but he can't be that, because when you really need him, he can be stifled easily. And I hate to say that, because I was with you, fighting Warriors fans and everybody else too. Like, nah, it was just a bad series, or it was, you know, it wasn't even that bad. But we got too much of a sample size at this point where he's just not one of those guys.
And again, there's nothing more that can be said. It's now he has to wear that all of next season, whether it's here in Sacramento or somewhere else with the money that he's making. He has to wear that until he gets another opportunity to do it again. And whether it's in the play-in or playoffs, he better take it. Like, it doesn't matter. Like 82 regular season games do not matter for Domantas Sabonis anymore. like they matter for him personally trying to win, but there's nothing that he can do outside of suddenly averaging MVP caliber numbers on a winning basketball team as a number one guy. There's nothing Domantas Sabonis can do to rid himself of that narrative until he actually takes this opportunity that's in front of him. And if he never does, then that's who he is. And those people are right. And I hate it because those people don't deserve to be right. But you got to prove it. And he hasn't proved it.
By the way, I gotta ask Matt a difficult question. I finally got a follow up. It took an hour and a half, but we text redacted Dave.
Oh no,
Dave, did you save the Kings? And Dave responded, "No way, this is such a trap." smart man who knows me well. Matt, I have to ask you a more difficult question than did you save the Kings. Is this about your boy? Tell me.
Which one?
Well, this is going to hit close to home. Tell me what you think Keegan Murray's place in this league is.
I think Keegan Murray can be to a title team what Michael Porter Jr. was in Denver, which is at the absolute best, a really, really, really good third or fourth option that can knock down a few big shots and then just rebounds and plays defense. That's his ceiling to me at this point. Gone, or I just, like, the Kings thought he could be an all-star when they took him with the fourth overall pick. Like, I think that ship has sailed. Like, I think Keegan Murray can be a 16-plus point per game scorer that shoots 38 to 40% from three-point range every single season, and plays damn good defense and can rebound the basketball really, really well. The only thing, and three out of those four things that I just said, he showed us this season pretty consistently. He rebounded the ball really, really well this season. He did. Significant improvement as a rebounder. Defensively, I mean, he gets the top assignment every single night. There's no denying that Keegan Murray is probably, I mean, if you can make the argument for top two with Keon Ellis, but he is the most reliable defender on this roster because he has to be, because he's forced to guard whoever the best player is 1 through 5 on a nightly basis. So defense, rebounding, already there. As that has gotten better, the three-point shot has gotten worse. I've been impressed actually with Keegan's ability to kind of use his strength a little bit more when attacking the basket and finishing through traffic and being a little more aggressive attacking the rim. So I think that's part of his game that can still improve slightly, not to a level that makes him a multi-layered scorer. I think he can be an elite or very high level 3-and-D threat in the NBA that'll have a long and very successful career that will always have interest from teams around the league because those guys are coveted. That's what I think Keegan Murray can be.
Well, let's tap into what that interest is. I'm willing. Not only is everybody on the table this offseason, I'm shopping everybody. I'm seeing, hey, what can I get for this guy, this person? Because you talked about it earlier, Matt, you know, needing a future, needing draft capital, needing, you know, maybe a young player. And I like all these guys, you know, in a vacuum. Like, I like their talent. I like them. You're in a tough situation if you're the Kings. And I think Scott Perry is going to have to make calls around the league about every player on that roster and gauge what their trade market is and if what that is can help the roster and help the organization. And I hate that we're at this point, but that's where we're at with everybody on that roster.
The thought that I had last night, Casey, because you're 100% right, I would be very, very sad personally to see Keegan Murray go. Be very sad to see Keon Ellis go if that's the direction they go in. I don't think they're going to do that, but who knows? Like, everything's on the table, right? If you have more, or if you have 2/3 or more of this roster come back next season, I think it's very bad. Like, I'm taking my favorite third of this roster, or trying to take a third to maybe half of this roster, and that's the most that I'm willing to keep. And maybe that's 5 guys: LaVine, Sabonis, Keegan, Keon, Valanciunas, or Laravia. or whoever, pick five guys that you're okay bringing back, and you shop everybody. Maybe these are just the five guys that you couldn't get the value that you wanted for. Everything else, new, different, fresh. Like, that's, I do not want to see the majority of this roster get run back next season. I don't want to see it. I want Scott Perry to come in and put his stamp on this team. And if he makes the team worse, so be it. I don't care. Like, if he makes the roster worse short term in order to start to build in a new direction, and for the love of God, build a roster with an identity that fits your coach and fits the way that you want to play and be consistent with that and not try and change that every single season. And that's a shot at Mike Brown too, because you had the best offense in the NBA, best offense in history. We haven't seen that since. Trey Lyles even said in his exit interview, I feel like we got away from that 2 years ago. I asked him and I asked Malik, if you could take anything from Beam Team 1 and bring that back to the organization, what would you, for this upcoming season, like, what is the most important thing that you would bring back? And Trey Lyles brought up the offense. So, like, bring a fresh roster with an identity that fits your head coach, whoever that coach may be. Start there. And then you can see about layering on all the fits and holes and things of this nature that you want to do to round out your roster. You can't round out this roster. There's no rounding out. You have to completely reshape it from the ground up.
Yeah. All right.
What an awful day.
Well, Jesse's making us end the show. And the truth is, we're probably going to do this all again tomorrow. More from Redacted Dave, who just would not acknowledge that he saved the Kings. I said, it's show content, nothing crazy. He said, last time you pulled this stuff, I ended up seeing myself holding Kenny's baby in L.A. I said, you know, that's fair enough. Then his old producer, Jay Mars, just texted me and said, I can confirm, Dave saved the Kings. So there we have it. Matt, great job, as always. Locked on Kings.
Redacted Dave,
ABC
what up?
10.